The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a great Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have a busy show. Adam Archuleta, who was in the booth yesterday with CBS Sports, the analyst, along with Greg Gumbel, former Chandler Wolf, former Arizona State Sun Devil. Arch, it is good to see him grow and do so by leaps and bounds. He's a restaurateur here in town. He was there for the preparation with the Cardinals, getting ready for Houston. I want to get his thoughts on what he saw behind the scenes and obviously in front of the camera yesterday out at the blowout victory by the team to move them to 7-0. Juan Roque is going to be with us today. Of course, Juan, part of the Rose Bowl team from the Sun Devils. Juan played in the NFL, was a big part of the Rose Bowl team, the offensive line that kept Jake Plummer upright. This coming Friday, it's already sold out at the Biltmore. It is the story this week around ASU. It is the Legends Luncheon, and it is the Rose Bowl team being honored for the silver anniversary. So I wound up Juan on board. He works in the Valley as well, so we caught up with Juan Roque. John Wilner will be with us today, the Wilner Hotline. All things around the Pac-12. U of A came this close to winning a game. And so we have Adam Archuleta on the Cardinals and then Juan Roque and John Wilner. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate them, Jeff Mishi, and their support. I was in East Texas for most of the weekend. There's times, guys, in life where you get so busy doing life, doing this, doing that, that you get away from the people that formed you and made you who you are. Two of my closest friends live in the Dallas area. One of them lives in the far eastern part of the state. And, you know, he's somebody that I've written about on the site. He lost his wife. She didn't wake up one day. Called me about a month and a half ago and said, "Hey, I met somebody." And every year he runs a haunted house down in East Texas, a farm down in East Texas. And I was like, you know what? I just need to go see my guy. You know, got to be there. And I can do that. I can feed the beast all day long. So, of course, Thursday, and I didn't leave till Friday, the Antonio Pierce stuff. I get a text Friday. Where was I? I was at a gas station and it was like 3:30 and it was Antonio Pierce has scrubbed a social media account. What do you think? And all I can do is laugh at this point. It's just please go win some games. And called around, and it was the word was he was upset that he wasn't on the road trip. But the Sun Devil fans were getting all bent out of shape about that. And then the Robert Sarver story, and I'm not going to make light of that, but that happened that night. And I had people calling me about that. And that is something that a month ago, I was told that there is something big that is coming down from someone who I trust. But that is not something that I sit here on this show and just say, well, I heard this. You know, as serious as those allegations are, and as serious as this report seemed, and people on Friday evening were, you know, in our industry, we're being reckless and out of control and got to be first and got to get the most clicks and all that stuff. And you know, forget about being correct or just saying, okay, here's a report. So my view on it has been through the weekend. There's a few things in play. And I thought of this when I first was first brought to my attention. So I apologize for that. When it's first brought to my attention. And that is that this could be Donald Sterling 2.0, could be, as serious as the allegations are. I have not seen the whole report, just what has been out there on social. I think that some people that are of the opinion who I trust in town, that it's really interesting that Larry Fitzgerald is part of this ownership group. That makes for nice splashy headlines. And if you've noticed the site, I've not taken part in the splashy headlines because I'm still waiting to talk to some people today about it. So those two stories are out there. And when you just go through each one, and they're different in their own space, but I know that the Sun Devil fans that that really are into what's going on over at Arizona State, there's a small base of them. Yeah, they'll announce 45,000 people that will be at the game on Saturday. It'll be a noon start. it doesn't mean that it is captivating the audience here in the market. I think the fan base is very fragile with Arizona State. The Suns, it's more along the lines of, if this is true and if this does lead to big ramifications, will it throw the entire organization off of its axis of where we were last summer? I think that's very fair to wonder just off of this report, and how deep does it really go? So those two stories happened on Friday night, and I've just taken the stance of, let's just talk to some people and see what's going on. You know, in terms of the Cardinals on Sunday, it was an ugly first quarter. And some were saying, well, this is predictable. Well, no, they were asleep, and they did wake up against a bad team, and they may have been looking ahead to Green Bay. I think it's only natural when things like that do happen that you look at it and say, you know, why is this team playing so poorly against a team that's clearly not even in the same area code, same zip code as them? So now it brings Green Bay, because I'm not going to spend much time on Houston. Yeah, I watched the game, sat there and had my own thoughts on it. This is a game this Thursday that is the measuring stick for where they are. Is this the 72 Dolphins? You know, if you beat Green Bay, then you still have to go to San Francisco. And you just can't get so far ahead of, you're halfway through a season and you have a perfect record. Because in this league, things can change in a hurry. I've seen Kansas City Chiefs fans losing their minds over where their franchise is. And I've seen Cincinnati Bengals fans that believe that they're going to the Super Bowl this year. Hope springs eternal. But what I will say about the Cardinals is that if you just look at all facets of the team, you know, outside of their run defense, and they've been a little shorthanded because of injury, from my view, at least, the people that were critical of, well, they don't have enough of a running attack. James Conner and Chase Edmonds have been just fine. Well, Kyler Murray can't throw the football. Clearly that narrative has gone by the wayside. I'm going to talk to Adam Archuleta about that here in a couple minutes. So the questions that were at the beginning of the season, you know, can J.J. Watt still play? Does J.J. Watt have gas left in the tank? Is J.J. Watt just a nice name that's come into the fold here? Can A.J. Green play anymore? You know, Zach Ertz, is he just a good locker room guy, but he can't get separation? I like Zach Ertz. I was watching him in the post game yesterday, and in talking about the green grass that was in front of him and the opportunities with what they have here in Arizona, how he can just go out and make things happen. So, you know, all of that, when I look at where they are right now, there's really not a weak link. I think Rondale Moore is, the more that he grows within this team, he is going to be a spectacular player for them. This isn't just a rookie that has come in here and is shown some flashes. I think he is just terrific. It reminds me of when David Johnson first showed up. Different position, I know. But it is fun to see a player come in their rookie season and immediately, especially when they're not the first round pick, okay? When they come in and they immediately make an impact, and you can just see that, man, the ceiling on this player is so high. And so all the attention will be on Aaron Rodgers, and all the attention will be on the Cardinals have yet to play a nationally televised game, if I'm not mistaken. You know, every time I turn around, Fox or CBS is showing Tom Brady. Yesterday, it was the Cardinals were the second line because, yeah, it was Houston. But for those of you that are tuning in for the late game, it is the Bears and Buccaneers. And that game was a train wreck. That game was awful. And if you just go through their schedule so far this season, the Cardinals, you know, they have not had the marquee announcers that have come through until yesterday. And I wouldn't say that yesterday was a great game, but, you know, when you have Greg Gumbel and Adam Archuleta, they're not screwing around. You start getting the Aikmans and the Bucks that roll through, or the Collinsworths and the Al Michaels, you guys know. You start having the ABs and the second teams come rolling through your building, you know you have something special going. And when they're being shown nationally and they're not the second or third choice, football afternoon in America, and it's the Cowboys playing the Giants, and because it's Dallas and New York, it doesn't really mean the national scene has seen what's gone on out here yet. I don't believe they have. I'm not one to sit here and get all worked up over somebody putting out what their power rankings are. It is kind of comical to see, you know, the Cardinals still are not in that space. they're still not in that space. They're three, they're four, they're five, and it is the, well, I really don't know about Arizona because we haven't seen them across the country. So I know down in Texas it was all about the Cowboys. And I know it's always about the Cowboys, but this year because they're having some success. The World Series is tomorrow night, and Mike Farron is going to be with us on tomorrow's show. Some of you have seen Mike or heard Mike through the years over on Sirius XM do their baseball and was the Diamondbacks pre- and post-game host. This last week, he resigned from the Diamondbacks. I'm very sad by that because Mike is a terrific voice within the organization. But he is at the World Series, Houston, Atlanta, and Mike said he'll be with us tomorrow. One other thing, you know, the Suns are struggling right out of the gate, getting blown out by Portland the other night. Campaign has got a hamstring that's bugging him. And so I saw a little bit of their game on Friday night against the Lakers. And it is early October in the season, late October on the calendar. Get back to me in middle of November, middle of December, really by Christmas Day. Let's just start making some evaluations as to where they are. And the Coyotes are just awful. Man, they're awful. But they're doing the right thing, trying to get the number one overall pick. There you go. On the other side, Adam Archuleta, and then we'll have Juan Roque talking about the ASU Legends Luncheon. But Adam Archuleta is next. He was in the booth yesterday, the color analyst of the Cardinals and the Texans for CBS with Greg Gumbel. None bigger name to bring in than Adam Archuleta. That's on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, as promised, Adam Archuleta is with a CBS Sports analyst. He saw the Cardinals on Sunday take apart Houston, although it was ugly early. Arch, I consider a friend. He is a restaurateur. He has a lot more going on than just what you see on Sundays. But for the start of this conversation, I do want to focus on football. What did you make out of the Cardinals on Sunday, top to bottom?
Well, Brad, it was really, we kind of expected it going in. You know, you kind of get a feel for games and how it's going to go. And certainly we knew on paper that the Cardinals really outmanned the Houston Texans on paper. I thought it was pretty interesting. Houston came out really fast in the first quarter. But as I watched the game, again, really impressed how Arizona, how complete of a football team they look like, and really in all phases of the game. It wasn't really one person that dominated. It was a contribution from really their entire football team. And they played about as I expected them to play. It's a good football team.
Adam Archuleta with us for a couple of minutes. CBS Sports, he was there in the booth with Greg Gumbel on Sunday, Cardinals and Texans. Want to get a deep dive from him. Take me back to the end of last week in your preparation, and for fans, you're meeting with coaches, you're meeting with players. What stood out to you that, yeah, we see touchdowns, we see tackles. What stood out to you in the way of culture and chemistry with this group?
Well, last week was really interesting because it wasn't a typical week because we didn't know if Cliff was going to coach. And so it was always that thing like, well, who's going to coach? Who's going to call the plays? How is it all going to work? Who's going to be active? Is Chandler Jones going to be back? So still, there was so much uncertainty going into this game. It was good that they pretty much had a plan in place because of what they had to deal with the week before. I would say just the vibe that I got from those guys was that this is a really confident football team that's not just playing well, but it seems like everybody's really having fun and everybody's really enjoying this process. And I don't get the sense that they're overconfident or they're cocky. I just think that they're a football team that really believes in themselves. I think that they see that they have some magic at quarterback and a guy like Kyler Murray that's really starting to blossom, not as a runner, but as a really a terrific passer. And then I think they see the athletes and the studs and the weapons that they have and how they're being used and how they're all getting involved. There's a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of excitement. And really, you know, the offense is getting a lot of attention, but defensively, quietly, Vance Joseph has put together a pretty strong unit, even though the last couple of weeks they've been undermanned up front. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that it's a team that's really enjoying themselves. They've got a lot of really good talent, and it's getting put to use in a really good way.
I know you do primarily AFC games being over on CBS, which means you've seen a lot of Mahomes, you've seen a lot of Lamar Jackson, and right down the list you go. You've seen Kyler Murray in person this past week. Where would you put him in terms of elite quarterbacks, Adam? Or is that, come on, Brad, he's got to go into playoffs and win playoff games in order to be in that space.
Well, yeah, I think that's part of it. And you do need a body of work. You just can't have a few games. But based on this season, he's playing as good as any quarterback in the league. I mean, it's undeniable. And it's not just, you know, it's a misnomer. He's not just a running quarterback, because that really hasn't been a huge part of his game this season. If you really watch him and you really break it down, he is becoming an elite passer. He throws a really pretty football. He throws it all over the field. It's really amazing to me, quite honestly. You know, so much has been made of his size. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that could be understated. It's significant, because if you've stood behind an offensive line, it's pretty amazing that he's able to operate the passing game being only 5'10", because literally you cannot see. And so for him to operate the passing game with timing and precision, and to be able to distribute it and not just rely on one receiver, he's really turning into a complete quarterback, and I think it's fun to watch. So I would put him right now, as the season is going, I would put him up there as one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Again, when you want to get into that next level, that next stratosphere, it all comes down to playoffs and how you do, but he is well on his way.
You're 6'1", right?
Sure.
With cowboy boots on. So when you're talking to Kyler, are you looking straight down? Are you looking eye to eye? There's been some made about the 5'10 is not even that accurate.
It's only been on Zoom, right? So yeah. I haven't had a chance to see him in person. Unfortunately, that's just the world we live in right now. So we were on our Zoom call. We were eye to eye.
There you go. That works. Adam Archuleta with us. Good answer. CBS Sports. He is with Greg Gumbel and did a great job on Sunday in a game that was a little rough early, obviously, but yeah, they figured it out. Of the teams that you have seen in person, or maybe just across the league, where is this squad outside of 7-0? Do you look at them and say, you know, they're not great against the run, or I can nitpick this, or I can nitpick that, or Brad, you know what, Green Bay on Thursday night, they're as good as Green Bay or better?
Well, I think that's a really good question. I think when you look at it, it's not just a cliche, but the playoffs really, really do turn into a different animal. Mm-hmm. And so to sit here and say, hey, they're a Super Bowl team, sure, they could be. They're certainly right now as they sit. I look at them as one of the teams that really has a chance to win in any game they play. And really, that's all you can really ask for at this point in the season. Because can I say that they're better than Tampa or Tampa's better than them? I can't say that right now. And I can't say that's going to be the case in January, because you really don't know. But certainly, all the really high echelon teams are all right there. And I don't know if there's a team that you can say, well, hands down, this is the team, because Green Bay is good. I know they beat the Rams, but the Rams are still a good football team. Dallas is good. Who am I leaving out there in the NFC? Green Bay, of course.
Yeah.
And then in the NFC, in the AFC, Bengals are kind of in the same place as the Cardinals, as a team that really nobody thought about before the season, but now is really starting to make a statement. So I put the Cardinals as a football team that is a complete team, the way I see it, as it stands, who has beat some really good football teams here and is battle tested in the first half of the season. And so if they can stay healthy and they can keep going, of course, there's a lot of football left to be played. But as it stands right now, the Cardinals are a legit football team.
If you're in a defensive meeting back in your playing days and you're getting ready to prepare for this team, and Zach Ertz comes in, and there were some people that said he doesn't have the explosion that he used to have, but he's a great locker room guy, this is a great fit. You're sitting there in the booth on Sunday and you're seeing all these guys that they throw out there on offense. How would you go about scheming, trying to slow it down out here?
Yeah, it's a tough challenge. And really the only time I had to face a quarterback with a dual threat capabilities was Michael Vick, but that was Michael Vick kind of playing a traditional offense, and really he wasn't as sophisticated as a thrower as the guys that are playing right now. And so that brings a completely different element. And of course, you know, the rules now favor the offense, so you can't be as physical and all that good stuff. And quarterbacks can test the middle a little bit more. But really, it's really challenging with a team like the Cardinals, who really have four terrific receivers who can really, really excel in their one-on-one matchup game. A guy like Rondale Moore, who I think is going to be a special guy. They just have to figure out a way to get him on the field. And then they spread you out, and you have to worry about Murray. You have to worry about the receivers and the matchups. And they have a really underrated running game and the way they're able to create some of those seams. So it really is a challenging offense. And it really, because of what Murray does and because of all the matchup problems, it really makes it difficult to play man-to-man and to play a lot of blitz man-to-man looks, because if Murray can buy time and he can, you know, get outside of the pocket, he's shown that he can find those matchups, and it's really tough to cover for that long. So it is a difficult offense, and they're not the only ones. There's, you know, the way the offenses right now are operating in the NFL, the higher end offenses, really difficult and a big challenge for defenses.
Adam Archuleta with us for a couple of minutes. Before I get you out of here, Arch, I want to go over to two things. One is Arizona State. Two is Core Life Eatery. And let's start with the restaurateur side of it. You've been at this restaurant business how long now? You started this
up? We're coming up at about a year. We opened up our first one. It was, I think it was October 31st or October 30th or something like that last year. So we're coming up on that for the first one. And then we opened up our second one in May. So yeah, about a year now. So it's, it's tough business. You know, nothing's easy out there in life. And certainly for a guy that knows that, who never really had anything handed to him, I know how it goes. And we're still grinding it and still working on getting people in. But we have a really great concept that I feel is, the more people find out about it and try it, I think we're going to do pretty well.
Core Life Eatery, and as Adam mentioned, the one in Tempe I've been to. You have one in Mesa. Is that Mesa?
No, we're in Gilbert. Baseline in Higley. So, out there. So that's a really good location. It's a really good area. That's people who live out there, really up and coming. And again, it's just all about, we knew that coming into this market, Arizona being a more sophisticated market than the places where Core Life is back east, and just more competition and more options. We knew that it was going to be a slow build. And so we're not really out of the expectation. It's just, hey, life is tough.
Yeah. You opening a restaurant during COVID, that's really, 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 really hard.
There's that aspect too. So yeah, absolutely.
What skills did football teach you in being a restaurateur?
Well, I don't think it's really anything that has to do specifically to the restaurant business. I would think that my journey in coming up in the football world, and not only just as a player, but also in the broadcasting world, somebody who has really had to be self-made in two areas. I would say that the lessons learned is just, you know, an unwavering work ethic and just understanding the big picture, understanding that success isn't always going to be immediate, and that you really have to have really good people around you, people that are going to be able to help you. But just know that if you put the time in, and if you put the care in, and if you're willing to stick through it in the long haul with just a really strong discipline and work ethic, that eventually things are going to turn for you and you're going to be a success.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. Have you paid attention to what's going on over at Arizona State football? The 25th anniversary of the Rose Bowl team is this week. Jake and the gang are coming back to be honored and all that. Have you been paying attention to what's going on?
Well, you know, I'm not, because I'm usually traveling on Saturdays, and usually, you know, we're on the East Coast. I don't get a lot of time to actually watch the Sun Devils, but I know exactly what they're doing. And I got to tell you, the mix of what the Sun Devils are doing, what the Cardinals are doing, it is a really good time to be a football fan here in the Valley. And I'm excited. I mean, I knew, and I had heard from the guys that were a part of that program, that they really felt like this year could be a special season. And, you know, of course, people say that all the time, but they really believe that inside of the building. And it seems like, you know, those things are coming to fruition. So I'm really excited that, you know, Herm Edwards is, you know, really got the program going, and they're an exciting football team to watch, and, you know, great time to be a Sun Devil.
It's good stuff. It's good seeing you. Who do you have next? Who's on your schedule next?
We have, I'm going to be in Seattle next week, Jacksonville at the Seahawks. So it should be interesting. We'll see.
Trevor Lawrence. See. Trevor Lawrence in yeah. the rain, probably.
Yeah. I had Trevor Lawrence the first game of the year. And so it was not a good start. It was against Houston, actually. Houston beat him in game one. And so I'm interested to see, you know, how far he has progressed, you know, now that he's got a half a season under his belt. And, you know, we'll see tonight, you know, what Geno Smith has to offer and see where Seattle is.
They moved you up with Greg Gumbel. That's yeah. got to be a that's got to be humbling that you've started out, you know, your journey. We've talked about it in the past here is from the high schools to the college, to the smaller networks, to CBS, to we're going to elevate you to be with Greg Gumbel. That's got to be cool to be with a veteran like that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you've been there and you've seen this journey. I didn't take the typical route to the NFL broadcast booth that you see a lot of guys take. And I have a lot of pride in that. And like I mentioned earlier, just, you know, I feel that being self-made really in football and now in broadcasting and really not just getting the job because of my name or my reputation or any of that stuff, that I actually was able to build it on merit and build it on getting better at my craft and knowing I still have a long way to go, that, you know, CBS has been good to me, and to get a chance to be around a guy like Greg, who really is a legend.
Yep.
It really is a terrific guy, allows me to just have more experience and experience more and stretch myself a little bit and do things that I'm not used to doing and get better games. Right. So I love my job. It's a dream come true. I love everything about it. And, I'm just glad and I'm fortunate that I have an opportunity to continue to pursue this job.
Hey, good for you. Good stuff. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and insight as always. Stay safe.
Yep. Thanks, Brad. Anytime.
There's Adam Archuleta with us, CBS Sports. And again, Core Life Eatery, Gilbert, Tempe. Check it out. We're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, Friday is a big day in our community. I have been on a rant about how I would like to see an Arizona State team please get back to the Rose Bowl for a game in January. The last time that happened, this guy on the other end of the Zoom, Juan Roque, was part of it. Of course, he was an All-American at ASU. He is a Hall of Famer at ASU. He works in our community at Phillips Law Group. He's productive in society. And it's great to see you. What does this week mean to you? 25 years now, Juan. And you guys are being honored this Saturday and Friday at the lunch.
Yeah, well, first of all, Brad, thank you so much for inviting me on. It's Monday morning. Like you said, start of a new week. And, you know, I was pondering that very thing this weekend. It's been 25 years. And think of how much has happened since then and how much life has been lived. And, you know, each of us that was on that team, you know, a lot of us are, you know, now parents and maybe even having kids getting ready to get married themselves, kids in college. I have a junior at ASU myself. You know, just life has just gone in just such a crazy direction, you know, and sadly we've suffered some losses along the way as well. You know, we lost Pat in 2004, then Coach Snyder 2009. So, when I think about that time, Brad, and what's happened and transpired since that magical season, it just makes you feel all the more honored and all the more blessed and all the more grateful that I was able to be a part of that. And to be able to say that in that moment in time, when you think about how even how Phoenix sports has evolved in that right. time and all the things that have happened with the Cardinals and the Diamondbacks and even the Suns, you know, we were Phoenix sports at that time. We were the show here locally. And to be able to say that now, I think says something. And to be able to say 25 years later, just to me, I'll adds to the mystique and to the magic of what we did.
You know, you almost weren't a Sun Devil. You committed to USC, right? I mean, yes. If we were to just go back off that, your journey is one that is really something in its own right. You were going to go to the hated Trojans. What happened? What made you flip?
you know, there's a 72-year-old coach over on the Raiders. He coaches the D-line by the name of Rod Marinelli.
Yep.
Let me tell you something about Rod Marinelli. That guy's a legend. He's a stud in the coaching ranks in the Pac-12. I know he's been in the pros now for over two decades. But during his time in college football, he touched a lot of young men's lives. And when he was recruiting you, he was always about more than football. And I bonded with him, and I was able to establish that relationship with him. But there were some drawbacks there. You know, he was at Cal at the time, and so was Bruce Steiner, who I obviously also really, really took to and wanted to play for. But they were in Berkeley at the time, and it just really didn't feel like a fit when I took my recruiting trip there. And then, of course, in the interim, Coach Snyder leaves Cal. But during that time, I had already taken a trip to Nebraska. I took a trip to Wazoo. And at that point, I felt my mind was made up. And I grew up rooting for the Trojans. I grew up, you know, right in the shadow of USC and the Rose Bowl. And I got to see players like Todd Marinovich and, Willie Lowry. Willie McGinnis. You know, players like that. So I felt that that was where I was going to go. And when, of course, the scholarship was offered before my senior year, I almost jumped at it, but I kind of took my time. But then I soft committed, and then I hard committed. But deep down inside, maybe I just didn't feel like I was really, truly happy. Like, I had that connection with Coach Marinelli and Coach Snyder and with that Cal coaching staff, you know, like Coach Cazzetto and Coach Bear. But again, they were now at Arizona State, and ASU wasn't even on my radar at the time. I had not been recruited by Marmee or his staff. So the way it all came together, so it's a funny story, is I canceled my last trip to UW. So Washington was my last trip. I decided I wasn't going to take it. I just committed to USC, and that was it. I was done. It's about 2.5 weeks before signing day. And who shows up to my high school is Rod Marinelli with Dr. Ron Cox. And Brad, I'm sure you know Dr. Cox.
Sure.
This guy is larger than life.
That's a hard no on that one, Juan. There's no way you're going to say no.
Exactly. You know, for those of us who know Dr. Cox, this is just a very powerful, magnetic personality. So combining that with Rod Marinelli, holy Lord, man. They came to my high school, and within 10 minutes, I was like, yes, I'll take my last recruiting trip to ASU, but I would like you to talk to my mom first. And of course, Coach Snyder, Coach Marinelli, Coach Cox came to see my mother that night. My dad at the time was in Mexico, so it was just my mother. We filled my dad in on the phone later. But Coach Snyder just talked about all the things that we had talked about at Cal, you know, about commitment, about academic achievement, athletic achievement, winning the Pac-10 championship, going to the Rose Bowl. And he was very frank, and he said, you know, we can do all these things at Arizona State. That's why I'm there. That's why I took this job, is because I feel this gives us the best opportunity to accomplish all the things we talked about on your trip to Cal. Again, I already loved Snyder. I loved what he was about. I got to see that staff prepare their team for that bowl game against Clemson, which was a Citrus Bowl, I believe. And I love that hard-nosed toughness about their coaching. You know, Rod Marinelli, watching him coach the D-line, I was blown away. So it just confirmed the fact that I was going to take the trip to ASU. And, you know, that January morning, Brad, I'll never forget, I got off the airplane. You know, it was probably about 70 degrees. The sun was out. There was just an energy when I got off that plane and I met Coach Henderson, and I believe it was Coach Slavin, who was a GA, but he had played for Snyder at Cal. They came to pick us up at the airport, and I was on the plane with Marcus Howard, who ended up signing.
Yep.
And then at the airport, you know, in that van, you know, Sam Santana was in that van, and the three of us just clicked. And needless to say, 48 hours later, I was like, this is where I want to be. It's something just felt right, Brad. Something just felt like it was meant to be, coming to this campus, seeing guys like Shante Carver and Gavin Hill and Brian Hooks. And I just felt like I belonged with those guys, like I fit in with those guys. And it was the right decision because, you know, the rest speaks for itself.
Juan, we're okay with us for a couple of minutes. The Legends Lunch is this Friday at the Arizona Biltmore. There's actually a story around the Biltmore, myself and Juan and Jake. Where were you on NFL Draft Day?
We were at the Biltmore.
and who was in the room with you? Myself.
I think you were there, right?
And Jake went and took a nap.
And it was David Dunn, and it was Derek Rogers.
Yep.
And, right, exactly. So I think that as the first round wound down, I think Jake and me were just at peace. You know, once the 49ers took Drunken Miller, Jake was pretty sour on, I don't think I'm going to go in the first round. Once the Packers took Ross Verba, I pretty much knew I wasn't going to go in the first round. And that's right. Jake was napping, Yep. During that time, I got drafted 35th to Detroit, and I believe Jake went four picks later to Arizona, and I think we had to wake him up, right, if I remember.
We had to wake him up.
He kind of goes, well, I'm going to the Cardinals. Like, I guess he didn't even anticipate that any more than I anticipated going to the Lions. I don't know if you remember, Brad, that Bobby Ross called Dave Dunn in the middle of the 31st pick and was asking Dunn if they could trade down and maybe that I'll be there, and Dave Dunn kind of pulled a whammy on him and said, you better not. He's going to go way before 35 if you don't, or way before whatever pick down the road. So they stayed at 35 and kept me on the phone for almost 15 minutes as the other teams were picking ahead of them. And then, of course, I got drafted. It's just a funny story that Ross held me on the phone for almost three picks in the second round. But yeah, what a day, huh? I mean, you know, Jake got up. He got to go to the Cardinals. I'll never forget when we went outside that suite, remember? And the media was already gathered there. Like, it was the minute he got announced that he got drafted. How quick did they show up, Brad? It must have been within 10 minutes. There were like, what, four or five cameras outside that room?
They were there. What Juan will not admit to is I saw Juan Roque nervous. I saw Juan Roque pace. I saw Juan Roque just the look on his face like, oh my gosh, what is happening here?
Right.
And yeah, it was that was a surreal day. So you're going back to the Biltmore. And this Friday, who do you want to see that you haven't seen off of that team? Who's the guy that's like, man, where is this dude? Because I know you and Jake stay in touch.
Right.
I know you guys are pretty tight. But is there a guy that you're like, I just really want to see this coach or this player that I haven't seen in a while?
I would love to see Coach Lyle Sutton-Such. If he's able to make it. I'd like to see Mike Morales. Mike Morales was actually a player at Pacific. And if you remember, Brad, Pacific disbanded their football program right before the 96 season. And, you know, Coach Snyder, God bless him, man. He offers the kid a scholarship. He comes in as a senior. That's not an easy thing to do. You know, he's spent all this time at Pacific. Now he comes into this team, which is poised for a big run. And he became a good part of the team. He was a good leader. He was a hard worker. Mexican-American kid like myself, we used to rap about, you know, where we grew up and whatnot. So it was cool to have him added at the end because, you know, Sam Santana, who is my son's godfather, who's one of my dearest, closest brothers, he didn't play in 96. He wasn't no longer part of the team. He didn't redshirt. So he played his 4 years and he was done in 95. So I didn't have, you know, one of my brothers, one of my homies on the team that was an upperclassman. So it was good to have Mike on that team. And, you know, for him to be able to be part of that, he played on special teams and to get a hardworking guy, played fullback, but he was behind Polk. You know, no one's going to play behind Polk, you know, as you know, yeah. Polk was just a monster. But I'd love to see him, Coach Sutton-Such, and really just Derek Smith, if you remember our linebacker, Derek Smith. Yeah. You know, he's one of the more unsung heroes of that defense. One of the guys that didn't get a lot of attention, didn't get a lot of publicity, but he was the heart of that defense. He's a hard-nosed player. He wasn't very big. But, man, he was mean, and he would take your face off, you know, every second of the way. And he played 9 years in the NFL. You know, he was a third-round draft pick. So here's a guy who came in from Snow College the year before, had only been in our program 2 years, and I believe he was drafted in the late third round. This is a guy who wasn't all Pac-10, you know, didn't get a lot of national attention, but he was just a damn good football player that people recognized. And the rest speaks for itself. He had a nine-year career with, I believe, the Redskins and the 49ers. I'd love to see Derek again because he was one of my favorite dudes from the team, a guy that I don't really see a lot of except, you know, here and there on social media. So it'd be nice to see him, give him a big old bear hug and, you know, say hello. And, you know, in the end, it's going to be great to see everybody there.
Yeah, you're good at bear hugs. Juan Roque with us for a couple of minutes. Before I get you out of here, I want to talk about the productive citizen that you are. You work at Phillips Law Group. You're involved with the National Football Foundation, Valley of the Sun chapter. You're doing a lot within this community, Juan. Was that something that when you were at ASU, Snyder instilled in you? Is that your upbringing? You're doing really well within the community.
It's a combination of things, Brad. Part of it is Coach Snyder. He was big on community. I used to go visit local high schools my last 2 years at ASU. Right down the street, Phoenix North, you know, right from our office here on Central. I went to see those kids, and sometimes occasionally I get stopped and someone will say, hey, you spoke at my high school when you were in college.
That's
and
cool.
You had this effect on me. And you want to talk about filling up with pride and with humility is when a young person, or actually even now this would be someone in their 30s, early 40s, comes and says, hey, you spoke at my high school, you changed my life, or you gave me some positive words. So that was something that Coach Snyder was big on, is, you know, community service, being a good citizen, you know, enhancing your community, having an impact on your environment. And a lot of it is just my upbringing, Brad. You know, I grew up in Ontario, California. It's an area that can be a very rough area to grow up in for a young man. And I had to make a lot of early life decisions that, you know, maybe socially cost me a little bit, and, you know, wasn't able to hang out and have as much fun as other kids because, you know, I was focused on school and football. And, you know, there was gangs and drugs and all these other things that a young man could get into that could totally sidetrack. You know, I lost my best friend at 16 years old. You know, growing up, he was my guy, and, you know, 16 years old, he gets shot and killed. And I had to go to that funeral, and I remember what his mother was going through, and swore to myself I wasn't going to do that to my mother. So those are the images that are burned in my mind when I want to do something for the community. I go talk to a youth football team or high school or anyone, whenever anyone asks me to go speak to a group, I'm always willing to work around my schedule and get it done, because I know that if I could just affect one person, if I can change one person's life or give a positive message to that one person who's teetering, you know, is on the fringe, you know, sure, making a bad decision, then it's all worthwhile, Brad, because, you know, we have to use what we got to be able to help someone else. And I'll use what I can till the day I die to make this world a better place, not just for ASU Sun Devils, but for everybody.
One last question. I'll go back to the top of the interview. I'm frustrated that the school has not been back to the Rose Bowl in January since you guys played. That should just not happen. What do you make out of what is happening currently at Arizona State?
I believe that we have the pieces in place to make a championship run. I think that our fan base needs to chill out a little bit sometimes and remember that, you know, a lot of these kids have only been in the program a couple of years. 2020 was a disaster, as we all know, with the cancellations and only played 5 games. So I don't think this team has really shown us what they are yet. I think that they're still like a mid-season last year team. So hopefully at this last 5-game stretch, we're able to really see that leadership emerge. See, you know, the promise of the championships, the promise of what Herm was going to deliver. I believe in this next 5 weeks, it's critical that this team comes together and shows us that and starts to kind of build those roads to those championships. And hey, we still got a chance at this, Brad. I mean, the season's far from over. 5 critical weeks. I think each game becomes more huge as time goes on. And I believe that what has been done with the leadership model and kind of compartmentalizing the program to, you know, specialize certain areas for recruiting and development and academics and so forth. I know a lot of people are getting impatient. People are saying, well, it's not working, or it's not doing that. Sometimes, you know, you got to just let it play out. Let's see how the season goes. We'll tally them up and, you know, at the end of November, we'll see where we are. And I think if this team plays to its ability, if it plays to the way Herm is coaching them and what they're being taught and all the things, they eliminate the mental mistakes and things of that nature, we may be having this conversation in December, Brad, going, wow, look at what happened in the last 5 weeks of the season. At the same time, we may be having a conversation where we're disappointed and, you know, not happy with what's happening. But I think that right now it's kind of a, let's just see where this goes. I think that I believe that everything is there that's needed for success. Now they just have to deliver on it. And it starts on the field. It starts, you know, with execution, limiting penalties, you know, not making dumb mistakes, you know, executing at the most critical times of the game. That is how we got to 11-0. If you remember, Brad, we were behind in some of those games.
Sure.
Behind by a big margin. And in the end, it comes down to execution. It comes down to, at the most critical moments, you have to deliver. You have to come through. And I don't think this team is there yet. I think they're getting there. But I think once they figure that part out, they're going to be scary.
I think that's very fair and very well put, and we'll finish off that. Thanks for your time.
All right, Brad, thank you, and go Devils, and I'll see you Friday, man.
There's Juan Roque, and we are back with more. Again, the Legends Lunch is this Friday at the Arizona Biltmore. You better find a scalper. It's sold out, crammed to the gills. We're back after this timeout. All right, as promised, here's John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. You can see all of John's content over on the site at sports360az.com. He jumps on in to chop it up every Monday. We appreciate his time and insights. All right, here's the thing. We had Antonio Pierce not on the road recruiting, if we're to believe what was coming out of the program. So he scrubbed his social media account. It's a bye week. The Sun Devils are a 15-point favorite against Washington State this Saturday. And it's the anniversary of the 25-year team that was at the Rose Bowl with Jake Plummer. All those players are going to be back here this Saturday, John. And I'm thinking, They better put on a good show, a noon start, which fans have been saying forever down here. Why do we have to have late night games? We hate Pac-12 after dark. I'm still thinking it's going to be 35,000 fans. That's all me. What does John Wilner think about what's going on down here in this game against Washington State, where they're fragile because of their coaching change?
They are fragile. And they just had a tough game against BYU. In some ways, the schedule works out very favorably for ASU, right? Home team had 2 weeks to prepare, 2 weeks to get over that tough loss in Salt Lake City. And now the visitor has not only lost its head coach, but its offensive line coach, its quarterback's coach. I mean, they're out hiring people to help run their offense right now. And they just played a tough game against BYU. So I think things stack up very favorably for the Sun Devils this weekend. But I will be curious to see just what their mentality is, right? It feels kind of fragile with the NCAA stuff and the way they just got, they collapsed in at Utah. You know, to what degree are they going to be focused and play with a sense of urgency? They still have got a great chance to win the division, but they got to be disciplined and they got to be focused.
All right, flip over to Utah, UCLA. That's the game of the week within the Pac-12 South. What are you seeing here, matchup of Utes and Bruins?
Well, it's different than I would have thought based on how Utah played this weekend in Corvallis. Oregon State ran for 250, 260 yards on them, right? And UCLA's got a terrific running game too. So you wonder if Utah's defense is going to be able to hold up. Plus, the first half of the game, Utah will be without its best player, linebacker Devin Lloyd, because he's got to serve a half ejection for targeting. So I think UCLA's got a good chance. And there's a lot riding on it, not only for those teams, but for ASU, right? Because if Utah wins, I think it's probably going to be hard for teams to catch up because they're going to have the tiebreaker advantage over both ASU and UCLA. But if UCLA wins, then things are just a log jam, and it could go any which way. So huge game for ASU in addition to the Bruins and the Utes.
Okay, between Utah and UCLA, I believe this is a much bigger game for Chip Kelly's long-term health as head coach in UCLA. Earlier this year after they beat LSU, I think I joked with you, yeah, we could stop the Chip Kelly watch. Well, seeing what's going on out at Cincinnati this year, I got to believe that if things were to go south, that there'd be a lot of money being backed up to someone in Ohio to say, hey, look at us over here. So if Chip doesn't win this game, do you think the spotlight goes back on that narrative?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think it's moving in that direction. Expectations were raised with that LSU win. There's no doubt about that. And also, excuse me, his contract, the buyout expires in, I think it's January 15th. Mm. All of a sudden, UCLA won't owe him a dime. That has been a huge issue. They have major budget problems. His buyout was pretty high, $9, $10 million, but it goes away starting in the middle of January. So if they don't finish strong, I think there's a decent chance that they will take a hard look at it, right? He's working for an athletic director that didn't hire him.
Right.
And it will have been 4 years.
Okay. Oregon, Colorado on the surface doesn't look like a game at all, but I have no idea what to believe of what is coming out of Eugene. I have no idea to see this team put together full throttle. This should be 55-0, maybe even at halftime. John, are you seeing this the same way as I am this week?
I mean, how is Colorado? They can't score against bad teams, right? So you wonder how are they going to score against the Ducks? Now, I will say that Oregon tends to play to the level of their competition, right?
Yes.
They were bad against Stanford, Cal for sure. This is going to be a game where they feel like they can sleepwalk. But Colorado is not even close to being good enough to challenge them. Even if Oregon doesn't show up, it should be 30-10. And if Oregon does show up, you know, yeah, 40-50-10, right? I mean, Colorado has got it would Colorado and Arizona. I mean, I know Colorado won that game 34-0, but, you know, they're really bad. They're almost as bad as Arizona.
No. Nothing can be as bad as Arizona.
You had to
be jumping up and down on Friday night at halftime saying, I'm going to have a story of U of A winning a football game. You had to be looking at that score saying, oh my gosh, it's finally going to end. 800 days or however many it's been. And then once again, the Wildcats played football with both hands around their throat. And the last time that I saw that happen, you just don't win. You never win. And that's what happened.
It's gotten to the point, though, they are so bad and it's been so long since they have won that when they do win a game, the story is going to be more about the team that lost to them, right?
That's true.
Than them winning. I mean, it's incredible that a Pac-12 team could go over two calendar years without winning. You know, you can see little glimmers of progress, but they just don't have the quarterback to execute, right? I mean, you wonder if Jordan McLeod had been healthy, could they have won that game? Maybe. Maybe they could have, but it's just, I mean, you feel terrible for the fans and the players because you can see the effort from the players, but they don't know how to win. They certainly don't know how to play with a lead late in the game. It's tough. And I don't know, Cal's playing better. So I don't know that there's they've got a chance to win any games this season.
Yeah. And they have USC again this coming Saturday, and that's going to be, homecoming for some of those kids back to Southern California, but that's a tough road to hoe. Yeah. All right, John, good stuff there. Appreciate your time and insight as always. Stay safe. Thanks.
Thanks very much.
There's John Wilner, and we're back with more after this timeout.